Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 27th of April. Our guest this hour, Barbara Strouk, and she is health and medical science editor of the New York Times and author of the just released The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, The Surprising Talents of the Middle-Aged Mind. Barbara writes in the intro to the book, as science has begun to hone in on what exactly is happening, a new image of the middle-aged brain has emerged, and that is this. This is good news, everybody. Our middle-aged brains are surprisingly competent and surprisingly talented. We're smarter, calmer, happier, and as one scientist herself in middle age put it, we just know stuff. And it's not just a matter of piling facts into our brains as we go along. Our brains, as they reach midlife, actually begin to reorganize and start to act and think differently. Now, if we could just remember people's names, which is a problem. Barbara is the deputy science editor and health and medical science editor at the New York Times and the author of The Primal Teen, what the new discoveries about the teenage brain tells us about our kids. She previously covered science and medical issues in Boston and in Houston. We'll be welcoming phone calls for her. I would think we'll have quite a few. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Hello, Barbara.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm so much better after I read your book. I'm feeling okay. Yeah. And here I thought, and we all thought for a lot of years in your book, the scientist you talked to said maybe this isn't true, that we were losing all these millions of brain cells when we were in our 20s.
Right. I think for many years it was sort of scientific dogma that our brain in our mid-20s or so started this slide, and that included kind of the wholesale slashing and death of even as much as 30% of our brain cells, which was not a very good picture at all.
So where did we get that? And it turns out that it's not really true?
It's not true. When they started going in and looking with brain scanners and actually, autopsies and started to count brain cell by brain cell, they have found that it's not true, and that basically as we age, we retain most of our brain cells. And that really is quite encouraging because that means that they can stay with us intact and healthy throughout our lives as long as we don't get disease or pathology. And that opens up all sorts of opportunities. Certainly there are some declines. There's some branches in the brain that shrink and some neurotransmitters. Things happen. But the whole idea that our brains are on this enormous slide into decay is no longer thought to be true.
That really is important news because It is something that people, and I'm in middle age, people who are in middle age greatly fear.
Yes, I think we've all been sort of raised to think, you know, we all read, you know, Gail Sheehy and John Updike. And I know myself, I sort of, I'm in my late 50s now and I was kind of growing up, I dreaded middle age, thinking it would all be kind of over by then. And our culture doesn't help in terms of telling us over and over again that, age is decline, and we fail to appreciate the actual talents that we've developed and the actual capacities in our brains.
Mm-hmm. Every now and then, somebody does some wonderful thing, and you cite this at the end of the book, Captain Sullenberger. I'm glad he was as old as he was, and everybody else on that plane serving people was middle-aged as well. It made a difference.
It did. I think they called them senior.
Yes.
And as it turned out, not only the people on the plane, but as the plane, this is the captain, of course, that landed, that made the right decision to ditch his plane in the Hudson and saved a whole plane full of people instead of trying to kind of rashly get to the next airport, which probably would have been fatal. And when he did that, he made the right decision. He was 57 years old. Everybody on the plane, the senior crew, acted at the top of their ability, and even more. We had all these tugboat captains and ferryboat captains out in the harbor, many of them middle-aged, who saw what was happening, decided to break all the rules and head immediately toward the scene of the accident. So you had a kind of a middle-aged extravaganza of expertise.
I like that. What is it about, and you take on this word, people say, well, I have wisdom now that I'm older. What do we mean by wisdom when we associate it with the brain?
Well, I think my image of wisdom is always kind of a cliche, you know, sort of an old woman rocking in her chair, you know, and nodding her head, you know, with some question thrown at her or something. But that cliche, A, has some truth to it, but B, the scientists decided, well, what is wisdom? And let's go into the brain and see if we can pick it apart and find out what it means. And there's a couple of things they've found. They like to call it expertise, but it doesn't just mean experience in what you're good at. They find that the brain, as it ages into middle age, which is now a long period with our lifespan stretching out from 40 to 65, even when if we're healthy, our brains do better in a whole host of areas. For instance, we're better at getting the gist of arguments. We're better at sizing up a situation. I have a friend who's a doctor. She says when she gets to the hospital door and she looks at the situation, she can immediately size it up. And that means there's more brain room, actually, to kind of be more creative and come to solutions. We enter situations knowing so much. We have patterns in our brain and connections that have built up through the years, and that's really what the wisdom is. We kind of know what to expect, and that means we can, we're better at, they've done studies that find that our social expertise increases and peaks in middle age, judging whether someone's a crook or not a crook. Our financial expertise increases and peaks in middle age, you know, judging whether a financial deal is good or not. And there are some actual physical changes in the brain, which they think may contribute to this, aside from the connections that are building up. We are also building what is called this myelin in our brain, which is the white matter of the brain. And this is a coating on the long tails of the brain cells that actually continues to grow into our early 60s. And this is the kind of stuff, this fatty substance that makes the brain cells actually move faster, and the connections. And so we can see these connections faster in part because of physical changes in our brains.
Oh, that's amazing. What about, though, and it's something we make fun of, except that those of us who experience this, and you cite Nora Ephron's funny piece about, I know you, where did I know you? I knew you from, was it the Suns ballpark game? Was it an interview years ago? This happens to us, and you can't, this drives me crazy that I can't remember. And part of it's you know so many people after you've lived a fairly long time, but you can't come up with who that person is or how you know them. What do you do about that, and why does that happen? Does that happen routinely to middle-aged brains?
I think if we're honest, we would have to say that for most of us, it does. Mm-hmm. They find that the brain actually is, there's lots of parts to a brain, and some parts of our brain are doing very, very well by middle age, and some parts have a few glitches. And one of those parts is the short-term memory, and we see that very easily in trying to remember an arbitrary name or where we know somebody from. So you'll think of your memory in terms of there's this sense of familiarity, which is memory, and that lasts. We know this person. And so I think we have to concentrate on the fact that that part of our brain is working quite well. But the names can disappear. So where do they go? And so
where do they go?
There are people who are looking into this, and they find that as we age, there's only one connection in the brain from the sound of the name to the information about that name. And if we don't use that connection, if we haven't seen that person in a while, or as we age, that connection can weaken. So what they find, though, is that the name is not gone. If you go through the alphabet, A, Adam, B, Bob, you know, you often get up, find that name for one reason. It's in there. It just needs to be primed a little bit more. Mm. And we also find that it's odd that we remember that someone is, you know, someone's a teacher, but we don't remember that her name is Sylvia. And that's because parts of our memory that hold that idea teacher, there's lots of pathways to get to that. You know, we think of standing in front of the room or, you know, authority or rulers or whatever. But with a name like Sylvia, you don't really have any connection, any sense of why that person is called Sylvia. So that kind of information can kind of disappear.
What about all those books we read, Barbara, and characters we can't remember and languages we've learned? We've all learned so much by this time in our lives. Is it there somewhere? Is it lodged in there somewhere?
I think it is. I mean, if you learn Spanish and if you go someplace where they speak Spanish, you'll be rusty, but parts of it will start to perk up in your brain. And if you stayed there long enough, you know, it will start to come back. So I think a lot of it is context and, you know, as you mentioned, that we do have a lot going on in midlife. We do have a lot in our brains, but that explanation is no longer thought to be sufficient. We do see, as we look at the brain as it ages, some declines in certain areas. These short-term memories, what they call episodic memories. Why, you know, I know I had Thanksgiving last year, you know, with Harry there. I can't quite remember. So that episodic memory disappears or wanes a little bit. But we have to remember that other parts of our memory are doing quite well. We remember autobiographical stuff. You know, I have a brother in Phoenix, and I know that, and we know how to hit a tennis ball and wash our hands. So what we have in middle age is kind of a contradiction, that some parts of our memory are not doing well, and some are doing just fine. So memory is an issue, and there's tricks we can use to improve the parts that aren't doing well, and no one quite knows why that short-term memory wanes. It may be because, you know, evolutionary terms, we didn't really need that kind of arbitrary name retrieval that much, not as much as this other powerful stuff that we do retain in middle age.
Right. Talk about all that's happened in the medical world for you to be able to write this book, all that we've learned about the middle-aged brain, and actually, for that matter, everybody's brain, teenage brains. You wrote a book about that as well. What are we looking at in the brain, and how much advancement has there been?
Well, that's a very good question, because none of this would be known without advancements in science, and most of them are pretty recent. We have, right off the bat, brain scanners, so we can now look inside the actual living brain and watch people do various tasks, and we can watch them as they age to see, you know, how does exercise affect the blood volume of a brain. They're measuring that very carefully now. How does the brain shift in terms of presented a memory task at age 30 and a memory task at age 50? How does the brain act differently? And if you're looking at, like, bad things, negative things, positive things, again, with brain scanners, they've looked in there and found that our brains during middle age, they used to think they would just fade away and they would find a brain that was acting much less powerfully. In fact, they find that a brain actually reorganizes and uses itself differently. And it is those people who were the most cognitively astute, the high performers, who actually learn to do this with their brain and reorganize and really get the job done throughout their lives by their brain reorganizing.
We're going to talk about, well, the things that you might be able to do to strengthen your brain, the different parts of the brain and which ones are most important for certain kinds of tasks, and using your whole brain. And what about foods? A lot has been said about, well, antioxidant foods and wine, exercise, the effect of all that. What about calorie reduction, too? Barbara looks at all of those issues in her book, and we'll be welcoming your phone calls. Call in early. I think we'll have quite a few calls. The book is The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, The Surprising Talents of the Middle-Aged Mind. Barbara Strauch is our guest, and she is the deputy science editor and health and medical science editor at the New York Times. 800-486-8655 is our number. The email is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome phone calls for Barbara, and we'll start right now. Fred from Palmyra, our first caller. Hi, Fred.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Fred.
You were mentioning something about how we get mixed up when we see people. We don't remember who they are.
Right.
I have an anecdote that may explain how wacky my brain works. I'm in my mid-60s now. I use the college library nearby here frequently, and a pert young co-ed waved and said hi to me when I was in there one day, and I was, the face was familiar, but I could not come up with a name. And since I drive a school bus, it occurred to me that, well, maybe she's one of those kids that was on my bus and was all grown up, now I'm going to college. And so I asked her if she had been on my, she said, no, just from here. And I said, oh, well, what was that? And she said, you checked out 5 books on philosophy. I said, oh, and that impressed you. But I said, you know, I remembered your face, but here's the way my mind works. My visual memory is like a jigsaw puzzle that's all put together. And then when I don't see that person, that jigsaw puzzle gets thrown back in the box and put away on a shelf somewhere in my mind. And then when I see that person, I have to reassemble that jigsaw puzzle to get the image, and I had the wrong box. So that's kind of the lighter side of reorganizing, I guess. So
right.
I'll get off here. Bye.
Thanks, Fred. Thanks very much for the call. Talk about it, and take whatever part of the book you want on this, but a lot of the book looks at this. Are there ways that we can zero in on our brain's weakest areas and through training buck them up?
Right. You can. There's whole science out there with brain training games and stuff. A lot of it does not have a lot of research, solid research behind it yet. Nothing wrong with it. It's probably harmless. There's one that has been tested rigorously, and they find that it does help, but it's one that you have to really push your brain really, really hard and kind of learn to distinguish sounds as they come into your brain. And what they do say is that you can, if you focus at the beginning, you can maybe help your brain get over a kind of a processing glitch that might happen as you age. So focusing in the beginning is really, really important. And you know, there's other things you can do for your brain. They're trying to train brains actually way beyond crossword puzzles. They're trying to train brains to use more of themselves, two sides, calling their frontal cortex and things. And even people suggest that one way, people who study adult education say one very good way to stretch your brain and make it grow is to talk with people who disagree with you.
That's right. Yeah, you said if you listen to MSNBC, maybe you should switch to Fox vice versa.
Just get your brain boiling a little bit and, you know, sharpen your own arguments. And it makes your brain work. And, you know, anything, your brain likes a good rut. And what we really want to do is get that brain out of that rut and stimulate it. And it means as we age that we have to push them harder than I think we think of doing so.
Mm-hmm. Is it that you have to learn, I think I read this in your book, I can't remember, is whether or not you need to learn things that are new. So the crossword puzzles will keep you sharp, but you already know that information, so you need to branch into what you don't know?
I think so. They talk about, you know, with crossword puzzle, they're great, but you're retrieving stuff that you already know. What they really want your brain to do to grow is to confront the kind of a one researcher called a disorienting dilemma, or something that shakes up the cognitive egg. And however you do that is important. Even they find meeting new people. People always have said socialization is good. Well, why is it good? It's not really just a touchy-feely thing. It turns out that meeting new people is a very difficult task for our brains. And so if we keep doing it, you have to do all sorts of things. Remember the person's face, you know, act appropriately, ask, talk, and look at the same time. So even something as simple as that is really fairly good for our brains.
Interesting. And what do? Write books on the brain?
My brain awake. Yeah, that helps.
Yeah.
You know, I did, you know, I threw in some running. You know, I'm not a good runner, but I threw it in because if there's anything that is a superstar in terms of brain improvement now, and the best science is clearly behind exercise. They know now that it increases brain volume and in cognitive scores. They know that rigorous exercise, it doesn't have to be a marathon, actually grows baby brain cells in the brain of a grown-up brain, something they didn't think could happen, but they've now gone in and watched it happen. And so they do know that the brain now is thought of much more like the heart. They used to think it was a protected thing, that nothing we did with our body could affect it. No nutrients, no exercise, nothing, because of the blood-brain barrier that protected it but also kept out all the good stuff. And so now that's no longer thought to be true. And what we do for our bodies and whatever we think of we need to do for our hearts in terms of getting oxygen and blood flow is perhaps even more crucial for our brains.
Oh, interesting. Let's go to Marcia from South Milwaukee. Hi, Marcia.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine, how are you?
I just had to call in. I'm 52, and I've noticed changes myself. You were talking about the details and memory and stuff.
Yeah,
I lose a couple of things, but it doesn't really matter because what I found has compensated for it was the wisdom factor,
right.
She called, the experience and the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And I do stock trading. And
before,
it used to take me a while to evaluate things, and now I'm doing it at, like, light speed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've done it before and you have the knowledge, I found that has actually accelerated. And in other societies, like the elders are gone to for their wisdom, you know.
Right.
I would rather go to an elder who has wisdom and can't remember the details than a young person who could tell me specifics about, you know, little minutia, you know. So that's all my only comment.
I'm glad you called, Marcia. Barbara.
Yeah, I think that she's right. And why I started writing this book, actually, is I had similar conversations talking about the same thing that Marcia just talked about, which is basically I can't remember what I had for breakfast. On the other hand, you know, I feel very competent, and my brain seems to be working better than ever. And I think that's the part of our brain that we're also worried about, the little memory things, that we've forgotten to appreciate this other vast improvement in our brains. And you know, the long-term studies, you asked earlier about what the new things are. It also includes these long studies of the same people, which we now just have results of. And they find that our brains are operating in many important areas, including inductive reasoning, better during middle age, from 40 to 65, than they did when they were in their 20s. And that shocked me.
Yeah, that is shocking.
Yeah.
That is shocking. Thanks, Marcia, very much for the call. Here's an email that's come in. This is from Tina in Whitefish Bay. The best way to stretch the brain, I'm told, is through physical exercise that also requires you to learn something. So tap dancing is the perfect brain and body exercise.
Tap dancing. I've done a little of that myself, and certainly it's difficult and hard and fun, and yeah, I think it's vigorous, good for your brain. There is some science behind that, too. They find that some researchers at Columbia have found that the best way to train the brain is learning something in context. In other words, if you're going to try to perfect your forehand, you do it in a tennis game. If you're trying to, and they found this with research with Israeli fighter pilots, actually, that if they trained trying to perfect one skill within the context of, say, a tap dancing show, your brain is operating on so many levels, but within the context of a whole thing. So I think that's very true.
Let's go to Bob from Milwaukee. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Kathleen. I have a question about reaction time. I'm in my late 60s. I do physical work every day. I'm in good health. Years ago, I used to ride a motorcycle, but I got away from it. And now I'm starting to develop a taste for them again.
Yeah.
But something is telling me, no, you in your late 60s probably should stay away from this because your reaction time wouldn't be good enough. I know there are simulators that can put people in situations where you can find out the guy's brake lights in front of you just went on. Did you just rear end him or not?
Yeah.
So I'll take my comments off.
Thank
here.
You, Bob.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Well, right. I mean, I think that on the other hand, you know, someone who rode motorcycles a lot in their younger years might very well have the expertise to be okay even in later years. You know, if you can get back in there, and if you, they find that, you know, genius is not born, that it comes with deliberate practice. And so if someone, I think, at that age had a fundamental knowledge of how to do that in their bones, they might do fine. On the other hand, the fear is also not completely unfounded, because the one part of our brain that does slow down from our 20s on is processing speed. And it's the kind of thing they measure by, you know, how fast can you tap your finger, you know, how fast do you swerve to miss that squirrel in the road. And they study chess players, and if the task involves only speed, the older players, even by middle age, will lose to the younger players. On the other hand, when you're playing an actual chess game, when it demands logic and thinking, guess what? The older players do just fine. So, you know, it depends on, you know, where you're riding your motorcycle, I guess, and if there's a lot of things you got to worry about. So it depends on the person. But, yeah, it's true that reaction times, no question, do slow down.
Tom from Stoddard. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, Kathleen, and good morning, Barbara. I have a question. I've had Lyme disease, and I had probably some nerve damage. I certainly was having a lot of cramps in bed, and I started using alpha-lipoic acid, which is, I understand, a antioxidant, and it's a lipid, I assume from the name, which the nerve cells and brain cells all use fats as a method of communicating the electrical impulses, and I would like to find out whether increased use of alpha-lipoic acid would be good for the brain generally.
Well, I can tell you don't know specifically about that substance, but I do know that there's an enormous effort to try to figure out what is it about antioxidants that might be good for our brains. You know, we have these vast studies that show that red wine, the ingredient in the skin of red wine called resveratrol, is very good at repairing the brain cells in petri dishes and also in animals. So what can we do? Antioxidants, as we know, are the reason we started eating bowls full of blueberries all the time.
And yes.
You know, it's high in all the very colorful vegetables and fruits. And for a long time, you know, they've tried to figure it out in long-term studies in terms of health. You know, does it do those kinds of antioxidants help with cancer or Alzheimer's or whatever? And they haven't really been able to find it. They find it in big population studies, but not in individuals. But nevertheless, they're looking also in the brain at the same stuff, antioxidants, because they think that when the brain when you burn energy, you throw off these free radicals, they're called, in the brain, and this is a kind of a thing that goes around and destroys the DNA of the brain, and the antioxidants are naturally produced in our brain, and they that repair process that kills the free radicals with the antioxidant kind of gets a little bit less effective as we age. So the question is, can we pour in antioxidants and help? And that science is still evolving. We don't quite know. I mean, there's lots of studies that show that, you know, older dogs fed a diet of antioxidants, you know, and omega-3s and things, learn tricks just as well as younger dogs, and much better than dogs that did not have that diet. It's true in animals. They're still trying to find it in people.
Let's talk a little bit about the similarities of the heart and the brain as we age. It seems to me, because I've been a heart patient, that there are studies that show pretty definitively that things like blueberries and fish oil and antioxidants are beneficial, and red wine are beneficial for the heart. So why wouldn't that just carry true for the brain if they're similar in some ways?
Well, I think that's what people think. They just have to show it in a scientific way, and that's the tricky thing. And again, even with the heart, you know, there's some things that can help it, but when they look on... The problem really is that in our society, in the developed world, you know, we have... Think of ourselves as having these junk food filled diets, but in general, we get most of the nutrients that we need in this kind of society. So to kind of tweak it, you know, and really have a huge benefit, we know that fruits and vegetables are good for us. We know that eating not too much is good for us in a broad way. So science likes to see it in individual people over and over again, and they haven't quite been able to do that, but that's not for lack of trying. I mean, they're trying particularly low-calorie diets with primates have been very effective in warding off chronic diseases of all sorts.
you interviewed several people who were really thin.
Yeah.
They were just holding back a lot of calories.
Yeah. Yeah. The problem with that, of course, is it's really hard.
And, well, sure.
You can do it with a monkey in a lab or something, but for a regular human and a regular, it's hard.
Well, it's fun to eat.
Yeah, it's fun to eat, and it's part of life, and,
sure.
If you really want to... You know, there's a whole society out there that, there was one that, they recommended that you, for dessert, you put a little piece of bread and put a little pumpkin pie spice on it, so.
Oh, my gosh,
okay.
You've got to be kidding me. Oh, no.
Yeah,
no,
I
thank you.
Just a little few bites of real pumpkin pie myself, so.
Oh, right. Thanks, Tom, for the call. We go next to, where are we? Paul is next from Washington County. Hi, Paul.
How are you? Good morning.
Hi.
I'm 72, and I sort of retired years ago, and I discovered that it's very insidious how you this regression. And I went out, and I got a private pilot certificate. And you have to force yourself to re-engineer yourself after you retire, because if you're engaged with a lot of decision making and analysis, and then all of a sudden you just walk off the cliff.
Right.
It has a dramatic effect on you. So I discovered also that multitasking is not really dual tasking. You really are you're switching back and forth at a high speed level from one focused activity to another one, and then back and forth. And I think people think that that young people, when they're texting and driving, that they've got two channels in their brain. They really don't. They're really switching back and forth. It may be in fractions of a second. And you have to have a retention of knowing where you were in that problem and then back to the other problem or issue. And I think you have, as I said before, you have to really compel yourself, force yourself to do dynamic things with your brain, engage your brain, and of course, diet's another issue. You have two issues you have to address. But that's my suggestion: is being insidious. You don't know that your brain activity is being diminished slowly, and you're not even aware of it.
Mm. Barbara.
Yeah, I think that's true, and good for you for getting out there. I think that it is hard because, if anything else, jobs are very complex and things, and when we leave them, what do we do? And our society really doesn't help much, I think. A lot of people are leaving jobs too early, I think that, on the other hand, there's lots of things that you, as you have found out, that you can do. Some of the hobbies that people have or the activities they have are extremely complex now. Digital photography, anything that if you really push yourself and get out there. But again, you're right, totally right, in that, this is not just walking around the block, that you have to have a little faith in yourself that you can still do stuff and then take a leap and do it.
Thank you for the call. Denny from Middleton, hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
Say, since I was little, I have noticed some people are good listeners, and I learn a lot by just listening, but other people just don't listen. I was wondering if there's a difference in their brain, because sometimes I have wondered if a person just can't do it or if it's just habit, and I wondered what you know about that.
Well, that's interesting. I think that, what they do find, certainly temperaments differ, and some people are so focused on themselves that they're not listening to anything. But
right.
I do believe that, as I said, when I mentioned earlier about the brain games that actually work, these are games that actually force your brain to listen and to discern different sounds coming in, the difference between pat and cat or whoosh and whoosh, and... the good listeners perhaps have a leg up there because they are perhaps better at getting the signals into your brain in the correct way to begin with.
Thank you for the call, Danny. Here's an interesting email from Julie. She says, I'm 39 years old, a female giftware designer. I've found that as I've gotten older, she's very young as far as I'm concerned, in the last 5 years, the creative ideas come faster and better form to the point where sometimes I have trouble sleeping and have developed some anxiety issues. I can't turn my brain off at times. Is this common with aging, with women, or am I just another slightly insane artist?
Well, all of the above. No. I mean, I'm not quite sure what's happening in her case. It sounds like she does have a surge of creativity and something that's quite interesting her, and the brain is just responding to all that stimulation that she's getting. I can't necessarily think of it as a totally bad thing. I think the brain, when it's creative, needs to be appreciated a little bit. Maybe she should get up and write the ideas down. Or there's lots of ways that they also tell you to calm your brain down before you go to sleep. I mean, if you think of the brain as an organ, maybe it is a good idea to calm it down a little bit and, lie in a quiet place or something, because, you wouldn't... Sometimes if you go out and exercise vigorously right before you want to go to sleep, that doesn't work either. Your body is too stimulated, so we have to think about our brains as a similar... like the rest of our bodies.
Right. Let's go to Sally next. Hi, Sally from Whelan.
Hello, Kathleen. Hello, Barbara.
Hi.
Thank you for answering so many of our questions about brains and brain games. You touched on finger tapping as a brain test.
Yeah.
Recently, I went through a bunch of brain tests at a brain study at UW-Madison.
Yeah.
And they told me that I was quite good at finger tapping.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, and since then, I've been very proud of being a champion finger tapper.
Great. Congratulations.
Madison specialist. But please tell me exactly what am I proud of, and what were they testing me for, and what were they measuring my tapping for? I'm so glad that you can answer this question.
Again, that's part of the, your mind wants your finger to tap, and how fast does that finger respond? And so that is part and parcel with this, what they call processing speed in the brain. And in general, with most people, it slows down a bit, from our 20s on, but perhaps you're luckier. Maybe there's something that you've done that is, I don't know if you're a piano player or a tennis player or something, that has kept that processing speed, at least in your hands, pretty good. So I think that may bode well for lots of things. I mean, the old idea was that because processing speed declined in most people, that's why they thought that the rest of the brain functions declined as well. And the new thought is that, yes, processing speed can decline, but that the other parts of the brain are so robust that that decline does not really matter that much.
Compensation.
I'm sorry, what did you say, Sally?
Or compensation, too.
Yeah? In other words, what do you mean by that?
Well, that your brain somehow compensates. It grows another part, or it relearns?
Well, what it does is reorganize. You're right, in terms of, for instance, they find as we go through middle age, increasingly we use two parts of our brain to do something that we used to use just one part for, which sounds like a bad thing. It's more like picking up a chair with two hands instead of one, but... And when they first found this, they thought, again, looking at real brains and a brain scanner, they thought, uh-oh, that doesn't look so good. But then they did it over and over again, and they found out, well, who was doing this? The people who were doing it were the people who were the most cognitively astute. The people whose brains were functioning the best did this. And so what they think now is that people who reorganize their brains and learn to use more of their brains, particularly the very sophisticated part behind our foreheads called the frontal cortex, if you pathways up there to go and grab that part when you need it, they're actually training people to do that now rather than just crossword puzzles. We've moved on to try to train people to use more of their brains because the people who do that as they age do better.
Hmm. If you don't mind my asking, Sally, why did you have your brain tested?
My brain got hit really hard by a truck.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That sounds like it's bounced back.
It bounced around a little bit, but my mom says that I have successfully rebooted.
Rebooted. Yeah. Congratulations.
It sounds like you have, Sally.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to Elizabeth from Camp Douglas. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. This subject is really of great interest to me because I am 86 years old, and I was a gerontological nurse practitioner, and so I ran into people who were really concerned about memory loss.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I was looking for a recipe through my recipe, my homemade recipe file, and looking and looking and looking. And I thought, my goodness, this file is too full. I should just get rid of some of this. And then it occurred to me that sometimes when I cannot remember something, like somebody's name or something, maybe my file box is too full.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I do is I sometimes selectively commit things to memory. Mm-hmm. I don't make an attempt to remember every little detail. I just think, I'm just filling up the file box. And maybe I'll never need that piece of information. So I try to confine my memory cards or in my file to things that I really need. And what do you think about that, my file box being very full?
Well, I think, first of all, that you've used your 86-year-old brain to come up with a solution that works. And I think that's, you know, in part what I'm talking about here, that, you know, okay, you have, maybe you feel like you can't remember this, it's overloaded or whatever, but look what you did. You came up with a solution, and a solution that works for you. And so I think that's the most important thing, that you did that, and you're not bothered by it. Another adaptive strategy that our brains start to learn, you know, we start to figure out what to pay attention to and what not to pay attention to, and you figured out that you don't really need all that stuff in your brain. And I was thinking the other day, you know, I have a bunch of recipes too, and I thought, isn't it funny that most of us have not bothered to memorize a lot of recipes? And even old family recipes, I know where to find them, sort of. I have big piles too, and it's not easy, but I know they're there. So, and we have Google. So I think as we age, we start to, if we age successfully, we realize that there are things we don't need to know. We can go find them if we need to. So why bother?
Thank you, Elizabeth, so much for your call. And lovely, strong voice, I might add. We will take more phone calls in a moment. We're talking with the author of The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, The Surprising Talents of the Middle-Aged Mind. Barbara Strzok is here. She's the Deputy Science Editor and Health and Medical Science Editor at the New York Times. She also has written a book about the teenage brain, so she knows about both of these brains, the primal teen, what the new discoveries about the teenage brain tell us about our kids. Two lines are open if you'd like to join the conversation. You can always send an email if you'd like to do that, 800-486-8655, or talk at WPR.org. here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. An email that came in a while ago. Barbara, let's go back to where we really started the interview. What are some techniques or resources, because this is a good skill to have, for remembering names of people you have just met? From Tom in Madison, ask that.
Right. Well, there are some things we can do. There's some fascinating studies that show, for one thing, that if we're trying to remember not necessarily name, but something we want to do, take some medicine or call somebody later on in the day, that what works best, imagining ourselves doing it. So I think that what that shows is that if you can put that thought in a different form, that would put it in a more visual form, not just a verbal form. So you create what the scientists call a bigger neural footprint in your brain, more ways to remember that, more ways to get that memory when you need it. And they find this in lots of areas. For instance, if you're trying to remember a guy's name, say his name is Frank and he has bushy eyebrows, when you're first meeting him, you might put in your brain, Frank, bushy eyebrows. So that visualization added to this kind of arbitrary name you'll be more effective in pulling up that name later on. Again, there's more pathways to get to that name. Sometimes priming, you know, going through the alphabet. I know people that do that. A, Adam, B, Bob, that works. So there's lots of things we can do. I mean, I think when we think about it, it's the arbitrariness of names that really kind of are the most difficult. For instance, I had a dentist when I was younger named Dr. Smiley, and guess what? I've never forgotten his name.
I'm sure you haven't. It's great. Oh, Okay, let's go to Jerry from Waterford. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, thanks, Kathleen, for taking my call. Barbara?
Hi.
Hi, how are you? Okay. I had two strange things happen to me, and I'd just like to get your comment regarding that. At one point in my life, I woke up, and for 3 days, I had super intelligence. I mean, I just knew everything right at my fingertips, and you know, it wasn't trying to think of something. I knew it.
Uh-huh.
And I was taking some supplements at that time, different combinations of supplements.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, after the third day...
Oh, no. After the third day, we can't hear you on the phone. Are you still there?
Uh-oh.
Oh, no, Jerry. And we are in suspense. If you can call us back. That's terrible. Thanks very much for the call. All right, Jim from Iron County. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A year ago, year and a half ago, my wife was in a really, really bad accident.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the trauma was to her body. She broke her back, punctured lungs, the whole thing. But her helmet came off, and she had some face trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a year and a half later, she's starting to have memory issues.
Oh.
We haven't had anything tested, mentioned it to the doctors, but they haven't made a big deal out of it.
Uh-huh.
Is there signs and symptoms? Where would you start looking for problems?
Well, with a good neurologist, first of all, which I'm sure you're connected to, so that would really be the medical professionals have way of testing memory loss to see if it's significant or not. Obviously, you know, with an accident like that, initially, of course, there can be a lot of brain swelling, which can be a problem. That you're kind of past that. So I'm not a doctor, so I wouldn't presume to say what's going on. But it is true that a blow to the head is something that is not necessarily great for the brain. So that is one of the things that one would want to not have happen as you age. On the other hand, you know, the brain, again, we're finding is much more resilient than people thought and much longer than people thought. So I just don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, obviously the neurologist would be able to tell you the best.
Yes. I find it very interesting, Barbara, that you've done a book now on the middle-aged brain, and you did a book not that long ago on the teenage brain.
Yeah.
What strikes you about, I don't know, similarities or great differences?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are differences. First of all, I think the news with the teenage brain is that their brains were still developing, you know, huge, huge changes up until age 25 with expansion of the brain and then pruning the brain back. Depending on use, depending on genes, depending on what that brain has been doing. So, you know, that gives us a lot of hope for teenagers. And in a similar way, although the brains of a teenager and a middle-aged person are good at different things, that's true. But again, in middle age, I think we have to think of our brains as still developing. And again, that also gives us hope. This is not a brain that is done by any stretch of the imagination. This is a brain that can still grow, that is still alive. And, you know, our hair may be gray and brown on the outside, but it doesn't mean our brain cells inside are. There's a lot of life in there. And depending how we use them, I think they can still develop as long as we're healthy.
So is your brain a whole lot? You have a very nice brain, obviously, but has your brain really perked up since you started running?
Yes. Well, it makes me feel better. You know, I don't know. There's certainly the science talks about brain volume and cognitive stuff. I do it because it makes me feel better, and I feel like I can move more easily, and I do a lot of yoga, too, which also kind of makes me more flexible, I think. I mean, I think in exercise, they do want your heart to pump and get that blood going in your brain. So, but any way you do it is fine. And the most important thing in exercise, I think, is to do something that you like.
Right. We have about a minute left. Rose from Fort Atkinson. Hi.
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 I have a couple of questions and a couple of opinions.
All right. Can you do just a question, Rose? We have 45 seconds left.
All right.
Sorry.
The question. I'm a bridge player. I'm in my 80s, and I have a friend who has Alzheimer's, and she can't remember how she got there, but she can do a credible job at the bridge table.
Oh.
Now what is going on there?
Well, again, you know, good for her. And I think that there's parts of the brain, again, with Alzheimer's. Sometimes people with Alzheimer's can dance. Sometimes they can't walk, but if they can dance. Sometimes they can't talk, but they can sing. So I think with Alzheimer's, you have different parts of the brain declining, and depending on what was the strength in your brain, the reserve, the cognitive reserve, they call it, might very well be helping her keep her brain, her bridge game, okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Rose, for the call. Well, this was fun, Barbara, and informative. Thank you so much for being with us.
Ah, thank you for having me. It was great.
Yeah, it was really good. The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, The Surprising Talents of the Middle-Aged Mind, the name of the book. Barbara, you spell her last name, Strauch. She's also author of The Primal Teen, What the New Discoveries About the Teenage Brain Tell Us About Our Kids. She's the deputy science editor and health and medical science editor at the New York Times. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Chrissy Pease for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Oh, I wanted to remind you, Thursday at 10 is our comedy show. We haven't done one for a long time, so mark it down and we'll laugh. Thanks for listening. Great conversations ahead.